Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking discovering food at New York Public Library and foodcurated.com. One of the largest public library systems in the world, New York Public Library has a media buffet that will make all my food-loving friends drool. In the studio, we have Rebecca Fetterman. Rebecca is the culinary librarian at New York Public Library. Welcome to Hot Grease, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
As the keeper of all things food at New York Public Library, what resources are available to the everyday person and the 24/7 foodie?
The New York Public Library has 4 research libraries and 87 branches, and we serve Staten Island, the Bronx, and Manhattan. So in the branch libraries, you can take out a new cookbook, an old cookbook, and take it home and try it out. And then at the research library on 42nd Street, which is where I work, the Stephen A. Schwarzman building, we have a large collection of both historic and modern day cookbooks. We have culinary ephemera in the form of menus. We have one of the largest menu collections in the world, as far as I know. And we have city directories and maps and a host of other things to give you a sort of a nice narrative of the history of food and restaurant culture.
I always forget that the library has cookbooks. And I've checked out a few cookbooks from the regular circulating libraries, particularly the Mid-Manhattan Library. But tell me about some of the non-circulating food books or cookbooks that are in New York Public Library.
Well, the research libraries don't circulate any books. So when you come there, you have to know that you're going to have to consult it and either photocopy it or scan it or just take notes. But we have, you know, our earliest cookbook, which is considered pretty much the first printed cookbook, is from 1475. And so we have that.
Oh, wow.
That's in our rare books division. We probably have about 500 cookbooks in the rare books division, dating back to the 15th century and continuing not necessarily to modern day, but we have a lot of artist books that are related to food, miniature cookbooks. We have Italian Renaissance cookbooks from, you know, 1610. And then in the general collections, we have everything from, you know, the new Marco Canora book to, you know, the Alice Butoka's cookbook and German and French and Italian and Spanish and a large collection of not just English language cookbooks, but foreign language cookbooks and a lot of periodicals, too. I think people forget about periodicals and the collection
food
of things.
Food columns.
Yeah, exactly. In newspapers, but also sort of even small pamphlets, and things related to agriculture and things related to art and cuisine and things like that.
Neato. So let's talk the NYPL menu collection. You tell an amazing story on chow.com about the woman who started the collection. Do tell.
Well, as far as I know, this woman, Miss Butolph, started the collection in about 1900. So the building as we know it on 42nd Street didn't exist yet. We're actually celebrating our centennial next year.
Oh, okay.
So she started the collection when the building, when the New York Public Library sort of was at the Astor, was the Astor Collection, which was on where the Public Theater is now at Astor Place. And she asked the director of the library if he would be interested in collecting menus for the library, and he said sure. And
so was she a librarian?
She wasn't a librarian. Okay. She never actually was employed by the library.
Oh.
She was just a volunteer, and we, you know, depend on volunteers heavily for help in all things. So she was a devoted volunteer, and she collected probably about 25,000 menus for the collection. So a large chunk of it is really from 1900 or so to about 1925 when she left.
So how many pieces in the collection?
I mean, we haven't counted them exactly, but my guess is about 40,000. Because then there are also bound copies of menus from like the Fifth Avenue Hotel and the Paul Revere House, which are from the 19th century. And then I continue to collect menus today. So
what are some of the latest menus you've collected?
I have the Maialino menu from the new Danny Meyer. I try to get a number of Brooklyn places. I'll definitely pick up a Roberta's menu. You know, I tend to write to restaurants and ask them. I got the Momofuku menus, WD 50.
Yeah. Wiley.
So I try to write to as many restaurants as I can, and then I pick them up as I go out to eat, which isn't that frequently, unfortunately. And then also people know that we collect, and they send
people
them my way.
People should be giving you free meals. What's up?
No, I do not accept. I don't do free meals. Don't worry.
So what menus would people be surprised to find?
In the collection?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting how many early menus aren't restaurant menus, but are testimonial dinners that are in honor of a certain person. Or we have a lot of presidential menus. We have the inauguration of President McKinley menu in the collection. We have JFK's birthday menu from the Waldorf, but it's not the year that Marilyn Monroe sang to him. So that's, I know, it's always disappointing to people. We have dinners for Queen Elizabeth given at different hotels in the city. And then, you know, just a lot of international menus as well. Even though most of the collection is New York based, we definitely ask for international specimens as well.
So what advice do you have for anyone who's doing basic to advanced culinary research and they want to come to 42nd Street Library?
The first thing to do is just have an idea. Well, it's obviously a good idea to have some expectations in mind and some time as well. I think people forget that we definitely are not an institution that is instantaneous. You definitely need to spend a bit of time there in order to gather information. And then to consult the online resources that we have and our catalog and books. And maybe if I teach a culinary 101 class, which I've been teaching, to attend something like that, and then just to ask the librarians. The librarians know a lot, and it's always good to ask for help because it's not the most intuitive situation doing a lot of research, especially in a building where you can't browse the shelves, so it's always good to ask for help.
Speaking of librarians, are you the only culinary librarian or specialist?
Well, I primarily handle the culinary collection at the 42nd Street Library. Mm-hmm. At the branches, there is a central collection office that goes about collecting those books. And then each of the other research centers have food-related materials that the librarians in those divisions also purchase for their division. So I work with a lot of people.
This is a great way to segue and talk about how important libraries are.
They are
to New Yorkers and people really all over the country. But New York Public Library is facing some tough times.
They are. Well, Queens Public and Brooklyn Public are all facing tough times. The city as a whole is facing, I think, $75 million budget cut, and New York Public is facing almost a $38 million budget cut from the city, which is almost a quarter of the money that we get from the city. And so it's crucial that people, you know, speak out in support of libraries. And you can go to nypl.org and go to that page, and there'll be a page that pops up where you can either donate some money or write to your city council person, and we help you get that name. And then just give a note about why libraries are important, because this budget cut could definitely reduce hours and programs that are vital to our communities.
Librarians rock, y'all. So do please go on nypl.org.
Yes.
And do what you can to help support libraries. We're going to take a short break, but you're going to stay around and talk more. And we'll be back with foodcurated.com.
Tell you what it is. In the song that I have to every recording. And since then, we have
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're back live streaming. Some of you folks, if you tried to listen to our shows live last week, one of our computers actually had a meltdown, but we're back. heritageradionetwork.com. Hands down, the hottest new food media website is foodcurated.com. This ain't just me talking. Ask the biggest and brightest people in the culinary world. In the studio, we have the chief storyteller, James Beard Best Video Webcast nominee, and the genius behind Food Curated, Liza DeGuia. Welcome to Hot Grease.
You are too nice to me. Always,
it's true.
Nicole.
So the thing that I like about Food Curated is that you just don't interview individuals in the good food movement. You inspire viewers by telling the basic story of living your dream. What were your initial plans in doing foodcurated.com?
I think that was exactly it.
Ah, okay.
I think my initial mission that made me want to start this all is I just wanted to inspire people. And I think really the best way to inspire people is through storytelling. And, you know, I had to pick a topic, and I've been filming on farms with farmers and chefs for a really long time, just not in New York City. Mm. And I was like looking around, and no one was doing what I wanted to do. And I just had this dream, and I knew if I did it right, it would go over pretty well in this city. So I did it.
So your very first video, what was your first video on foodcurated.com?
My very first video was July 2009, and it was Rooftop Farms.
Oh.
Yes, it was with Annie Novak.
Yeah.
And I had to pick a good story for my first story because, you know, so many people cover food in the city. It's such a tough industry. And a crowded industry to get in. And, you know, it was in my neighborhood. It was kind of urban farming was kind of a big deal. Not too many people were talking about it at the time locally. And I was one of the first people up there with a camera and convinced them without anyone knowing what I was or what I was doing at the time to just let me go film with them. And I promised them I would tell them a killer story, and it turned out really well.
What videos do you get the most comments about? I mean, I definitely will say, I haven't seen the rooftop farms. Is that on your website? I think I've seen all of the videos except for that one.
Thanks.
I love Polly G. I love the scratch bread. Milkmaid ice cream, one of my favorites. But what are the videos that people are always like stopping you and saying, hey?
I would say scratch bread is a big one because it was so inspiring. Matt Tilden basically just brought me into his world from 1 to 7 a.m. in the morning, where his hands just do all the work and he kind of gets into the zone of making bread. And you really got into his philosophy behind his food. It was not just about food for him. It was about starting a movement and telling his story, inspiring people through that. And he wouldn't let me film his face. So you really had to focus on his hands because he didn't want people to know it was him. He just wanted people to hear his voice and hear his message more than anything. And people really stopped me a lot for that one. And then also the meat hook when I covered
that one is
the
funny.
Sausage making. Yeah. And S-H-I-T talking at the meat hook. People seem to love that piece.
Yes. So what is your process? Do you just think I'm going to go in with the camera and then kind of like scratch bread? Did you know up front that he didn't want his face filmed or?
He said he might not want to have his face filmed. And when I got there, he said he definitely did not. So, you know, a lot of what I do is just show up. And I have a lot of questions planned, but I just kind of go with it. You know, it's just me. When I show up, it's just me and a camera. I have kind of a set idea of what I want to go through, but I'm open. You know, I'll spend anywhere from 3 hours at a place to all day if they want me to just hang out. Because, you know, the story, you can't force a story. And you can't force someone to be relaxed with you from the start. So you have to kind of wait it through until they become relaxed. And then let the story evolve. And you have to make sure you film all the magical moments that people don't get to see when they're creating the food and cooking. And that can take a long time, you know? So, the whole process is just kind of like show up and, you know, you figure out what you need. And then you kind of know when you're ready, when you have all you need, because, you know, I've been shooting stories for a long time, since 2003.
Oh, wow. So I didn't realize. So before, I guess we have to step back a minute. Before you got into food, doing food stories, were you doing other things around travel, I think I heard or read?
Yeah. I mean, before I launched Food Curated, I was producing, editing, and hosting a series on the environment on the internet. I also was a food host and reporter out in the Hamptons for a long time. So that's where I really got my start, was out in the Hamptons. And that's when I started working on farms with farmers and chefs and showing people how things are harvested and how to bring those harvest goods to the kitchen and cook. And that's what really inspired me to really get involved with local food and the sustainable food movement.
So the New York City Food Film Festival is later this month. I forget the dates. Is it like the 19th through the 23rd?
No.
I'm sorry.
It's close, though. It's June 23rd to the 27th.
I guess I should know that because I think I'm doing a grits take.
Oh, you're doing the grits takedown on Sunday, the 27th, with Matt Timms.
Yeah, he has a show here on Heritage. So you're working on a film for the film festival, right?
Yeah, I actually have 4 films.
Oh,
in the
really?
Film festival. 2 are not on the schedule, but they're going to be during the big food truck drive-in. But
give us a sneak peek.
I can't. I told them I couldn't say yet, but you'll be able to eat all the food of the films that I'll be showing on Saturday. But my Widow's Hole oyster piece, which was also one of the favorite pieces I've done, is going to be on Wednesday the 23rd during the big New York City Shuck and Suck night.
Oh, okay.
And they're going to source 9,000 oysters for it from all down the East Coast. And you'll be able to eat actual Widow's Hole's oyster. We're going to bring in the oyster farmer for my piece.
Oh, that's cool.
And it'll be a whole night of sucking and shucking.
And what's the other film?
The other film is my piece with Fatty Q.
Oh, okay.
Yes. We love Fatty Q. Yes. That's going to be during Edible Adventures on Thursday night.
Yeah, so
at the Water Taxi Beach, actually.
If you're listening, you guys, I know that the tickets are sold out for the drive-in.
Yes.
So the other two things, I'm not sure about the oyster. I think it's still, they may have a few tickets.
Yeah, there's still tickets left and available for the oyster night and for the Southeast Asian Street Food Market night at the Astor Center.
Okay, so, cool. So go on to New York's, I think it's NYC Food Film Festival, or you can Google it and then get some information about Liza's films that will be there. There's another great thing that's happening this week that you're involved with, and you're on a panel for Tech Munch.
Yes, you as well. You're going to be
moderating the first panel of the morning, Food Trends.
Yes, with some good friends of ours.
Yeah, some good friends who've been on the show, Ula.
And Adriana.
Adriana and one other person, Miss Haiku. She does haikus, lunch haikus. It's a really cool website. I think she tweets them and she has a website. But they're all food haikus.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Tech Munch. It's basically a whole day workshop dedicated to making you a better, more efficient, more well-rounded food blogger, and also teaching you skills on how to monetize. And it's Thursday, June 10th, and it's an all-day affair.
It starts at 8 to 9. And what's the title of your panel?
Well, I'm going to be in a panel talking about curating food content.
Makes sense.
I'm going to be speaking with Epicute and also Nichelle Stevens of Cupcake.
So the panel is actually, Tech Munch is an event in conjunction with Internet Week, New York City Internet Week, and it's hosted by Bakespace.com and produced by Nichelle Stevens of Cupcakes Take the Cake blog. So, yeah, definitely go on TechMunch.com and FoodCurated.com to check out any videos. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more food content and library stuff. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is being sponsored by TechServe. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. We're back with Rebecca Fitterman of New York Public Library and Liza DeGaia, creator of foodcurated.com. Rebecca's blog is titled Cooked Books, and Liza's new stories will be featured at New York City Food Film Festival. So we have a very fun segment, the last segment. I have a few questions, and the first one is, if you're stranded on an island with only a full stock kitchen, what food books would be on your bookshelf?
Fully stocked kitchen?
Fully stocked kitchen.
I would say some of my favorite cookbooks. Marcella Hazan.
Okay.
I would say Sunday Suppers at Luke, because I'd have the time if I was stranded to cook it all. and maybe a couple of Indian cookbooks.
Okay. What about you, Liza?
Oh, my gosh.
It's a really hard question.
It is a hard question. Yeah. You know, I'm such a sucker for all the Cook's Illustrated books.
Oh, yeah.
I just love reading how they break it down and... I don't know, I've always had a lot of successes with cooking those dishes. I also love the new Ad Hoc at Home. I got it as a gift recently, yeah. And it's such it's a good, beautiful cookbook.
All
the pictures make me so hungry. And if there's like a book I've been gifting a lot, it's been Ad Hoc at Home.
Good to know. So we're still on the stranded island. What person, living or dead, famous or non-famous, would you love to prepare a meal with on the island?
Hmm.
Oh, that's a hard one.
Let's see. I mean, I always enjoy cooking with my friends. I mean, that's to me the best, you know, because you can drink, you can have your cocktails, you can have wine, you know, it's just a good energy. I like
shout
cooking
out
with
to
friends.
The friends. Yes. Oh, they'll be all excited when they hear this now. Yeah. What about you, Liza?
I don't know. I know I would definitely say my dad.
Oh,
he is like such my inspiration, and he taught me everything I know about food, and he can do wonders with a fully stocked pantry and go nuts. And we also know how to fish together quite a bit, so
oh,
we
wow.
do quite well on this stranded island.
So you don't even need a fully stocked kitchen, huh? You can get your own.
Exactly.
Since we're talking about not living with certain things, what are y'all's thoughts on marrying print food media and online food media resources? Can it happen? Do you see some great examples of that?
Yeah, I think it can happen. I mean, I think I'm gathering recipes more and more just going online, and there are certain sites that I go to more frequently than others. But I guess I do have that librarian mindset where when I'm at home, I definitely am like, what book would have this recipe? But I think there are ways. I think there's a new site called Eat My Books, which indexes your cookbooks.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. And so that's a really nice way to sort of marry the two. And it's like you can look up, you know, you could put in your cookbook collection and you could look for, you know, I don't know, blueberry pie. And it will tell you what cookbooks have recipes for blueberry pie that you own. And then you can just, you know, pull those out and consult those.
And I think that service, you actually pay a fee.
It is a fee. But I think right now, I believe for a limited time, it's like a lower fee for a lifetime membership. And it's a really good idea. And, you know, and then there are other, you know, Epicurious. I go to Epicurious all the time.
I think another example, Liza, of that, and we were on a panel with Meryl and Amanda, is food52.com.
Yeah. Yes. They're really good at really creating a community around food and making it interactive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about that. And I love that all the recipes that they're curating and winning contests for actually gets created into a cookbook. And I think you really have to, I think these days, in order to succeed, be multidimensional as far as how you're going to, you know, do your marketing and expose yourself on many different levels. And I think they've been really successful.
Totally. And I read a few months ago, the owner of Omnivore Books in San Francisco, which is a cookbook store, Celia Sack, she's actually been on the show before. She just got a deal where I'm a little confused. I think you'll take your old recipes and you can write it in this book, or I'm not sure. It's bringing the whole new media and old media way, but taking all your recipes and put them in some kind of book and maybe an iPad device. I'm not sure. I need to really email her and ask her what it is, but it seems really cool. So let's talk seasonal. I know we're kind of all over the place talking about food. Let's talk about your favorite seasonal foods. And so you're going online and you see this great stuff at the market and you Google or go to your favorite site. What are some of your favorite seasonal foods now?
Well, one of my favorite seasonal desserts was one I had at a restaurant in Portland, Oregon a couple of years ago called Higgins. And it was a blackberry cobbler with Ooh. Basil ice cream. And it was like the perfect combination. And it's become like the just ideal summer dessert in my
Oh, so you're always waiting on the blackberries.
Pretty much.
So what market do you go to? Because you live in Brooklyn.
I go to the Grand Army Plaza Farmers Market. And I also am a member of the food co-op.
Oh.
And I got to say, F-top I love it. No F-top. No F-top.
No F-top hours? No. How are you getting your F-top hours?
I'm actually working tonight.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we'll have to talk after the show. I know a way you can get some F-top hours.
Okay.
You live in Greenpoint. So
I do, but I probably stop by the Union Square Farmers Market at least once or twice a week.
Okay, and cool.
I am loving the local strawberries and the sugar snap peas right now. They are so sugary and delicious.
I've not gotten the peas. You. I mean, I've had the strawberries, like, 3 times already. They seem they're a little early.
Oh, they're sweet right now, though. The ones I got last Friday were so sweet. And then I'm a big, big fan of corn season.
Oh.
I love the local sweet corn.
We love the
corn. Can't get enough of it.
We love the corn. Ladies, it's been a pleasure having both of you guys in the studio today.
Thanks for having us.
Give their listeners your blog one more time.
It's cookedbooks it's cookbooks.blogspot.com.
Cool. And again, if you want to do something to help with New York Public Library,
nypl.org.
Liza, people, do you have a newsletter? How can people, can they get updates from you?
Yeah, I mean, you can subscribe to my video feed off my website, foodcurated.com, but I'm very active on Twitter. So if you want to hit me up, I'm very talkative with strangers.
And your Twitter handle is?
It's Skeeter NYC.
Thank you, ladies, for being on Hot Grease. Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled. My own beliefs are in